Welcome to the latest episode in the Enterprise Times Security Podcast Series. My name is Ian Murphy, and my guest today is Mike Wood, CMO at Versa Networks. Today we're going to talk about how IT has and will continue to change if it's to support a more remote workforce and the implications that has for companies. Mike, welcome to the podcast.
Ian, thank you for having me. I've been in the networking and security industry for about 30 years now, and I've done a lot of design, development, and architecture of networking products and security products. I've also driven a lot of product direction in the space, and I'm excited now to be part of a company called Versa Networks that's a pioneer in areas like secure access, service edge, network security, and software-defined wide area networking.
The pandemic's created the biggest change in working locations we've ever seen. The mass migration to work from home brought with it a huge pile of associated IT and security challenges, and it continues to be a problem for businesses.
That's a great question. Most likely what we'll see is a continued presence of work from home and even work from anywhere as people travel between homes and visit family and friends. They oftentimes bring their work with them. That will certainly continue. We'll also see GTO, which is go to office, become a term where some people end up going into the office a few times a week. The presence of work at home will continue to persist. There's much more flexibility in terms of businesses and the way that they view and support their employees, their contractors, and their partners in working from home. There's much more trust now. It's the ultimate experiment that we've seen in 2020 that people can work from home. They can be productive.
How far out do you see that trust being pushed? One of the things that we hear is that when they're bringing on younger workers, when they're trying to go through training, they're uncomfortable doing that remotely. They're not sure how they can support a lot of these workers in a remote environment because it's very different to dealing with it in a physical office. But at the same time, that argument's been used an awful lot to limit those who were entitled to work from home. Do you see a more open world starting to appear here? I'll come back to the security tools part of that in a minute, but we've seen some rather worrying trends in those tools, and it goes back to this issue of trust. The Microsoft announcement got widely pilloried because once again, it appeared that this was another way to remotely monitor staff. Now, to be fair, we've had remote monitoring since I entered this industry in the very early 80s, when input clerks on mainframes were monitored to see how many keystrokes they made per minute, per hour, whatever the metric the company was using. We're now starting to see much more insidious tools, the use of cameras to take photographs of members of staff to see if they're actually at their desk, which risks privacy and everything else in their home environments. This puts a lot of pressure on staff and doesn't really say your company trusts you. Do you see a new mechanism needing to be created here to balance that out?
Absolutely. The pandemic has been a forcing function on multiple dimensions. One, it's really forced a lot of businesses to adopt digital initiatives and digital transformation, which have provided tools that have enabled employees to be much more productive, much more collaborative, and much more interactive with one another over collaboration platforms. We've seen this happen a lot. Another aspect is many of us have been hiring new employees. This is the state for them. This is the environment that they're operating in. They're adapting very quickly to this. Things like onboarding, training, and bringing new employees up to speed has really become much more of a virtual endeavor. The tools that exist now are much better than they were even a year or 2 years ago. Businesses are doing work, meeting goals and objectives and things like that. Businesses and leaders have developed mechanisms to enable them to provide better guidance on what the objectives are, the goals, the metrics we're going to measure against, and then mechanisms to be able to check in on those using Office 365, Google Suite, or other collaboration tools. Seeing maybe more adoption of tools like Slack to be able to provide real-time interaction. Necessity is the mother of invention. The need here has been to have all these virtualized tools and mechanisms and methodologies. We've seen a lot of businesses actually adopt those and even create their own. I suspect in 2021, we'll see introduction of many new tools that we never thought could even be considered and used in business to make this even easier.
But how do we create those boundaries? If we think about one of the oft-touted benefits of working from home, it's the ability to time shift your work and make it happen around your normal day. At the moment, people are having to care for children at home. Schools are sometimes open, sometimes closed. It depends upon the current state at the time. That means people are having to deal with childcare challenges, deal with education challenges, things they wouldn't normally have expected when they were originally planning to work from home. Are employers aware enough, do you think, to be able to reset those boundaries? Because productivity is often still defined in that working day paradigm, which is a block of time, rather than a more flexible period of time.
This is a really good question. In any space, tools can be used for good and they can also be used for bad. Tools are oftentimes created to help increase productivity and make us more efficient. And that's always been the case. Having visibility is essential in terms of IT teams to be able to make sure everything's working well. As an IT leader, I want to know how my applications are performing. I want to know how my network is operating. I want to know how my security is interacting with aspects of the system. And I want to know if there's actually a threat that occurs. Tools are necessary to be able to do that. And those make essential to this. There's a boundary, though, where we cannot encroach into the privacy of individuals in their home. Businesses have operated, for the most part, on an ethical basis where there is a separation of you personally and what you're doing within your business. Now, what's happening within your business is oftentimes monitoring and investigation, primarily because that's something that the business has a responsibility to do. It's not only their reputation, but legally for compliance reasons and regulatory reasons, there are clear reasons why they want to be sure that the entire company is operating at ethical level, at compliance level. And there's certainly an obligation for the business to be able to adhere to those type of requirements. Breaching into one's personal life and personal environment is completely different as a result of this new paradigm that we see in 2021. We'll start to begin to see much more of a clear delineation of, okay, this is private, this is my personal life and my personal environment, personal space. When I'm doing this, this is my business life and my corporate experience and corporate space, whether that's virtual or physical. There'll be tools that will allow businesses to more concretely define those boundaries. And there are boundaries. There's no doubt that there's absolutely got to be boundaries, especially when more employees are working from home. My home is my personal space. It's where I spend time with my family and I do the things that are important to me as an individual. But now I'm actually performing some of my work here. So having that separation is essential.
I think they're quite challenging for a lot of organizations. BYOD is a really good example of that. If I'm using my device for work, great, but I still own that device. So the question is, what do you want me to have on that device, such as a security solution, such as applications, and what control, what monitoring should I allow you to have on that device? It's not easy for a user to go in and click, I'm working, click, I'm personal, click, my child is using this for education. There's no easy route across that. In addition, BYOD has been used as a way of cutting capex by many organizations. If they're not having to buy all this technology, that's money they're saving. They push that cost of running their business off onto staff. One of the things in the UK is that the government has agreed that if the employer wants to pay for broadband, they can. So they can buy business level broadband for the employee, but it must only be used primarily for business work. The question then comes, how does the business manage that? Does it go as far as putting a router on site that it can manage? I'm really not sure that from a tooling perspective, whether we talk about general IT teams or IT sec teams or even HR teams, we've really got a clear grip on this.
That's a really good point. Let's take a couple of examples, Ian. Let's say 10 years ago, it was very clear when I was on the clock and I was working for the company I worked for, the corporation. And it was also pretty clear when I wasn't working for the company or doing work for that company during the day, during the week, during the month. There are a couple of key data points there. One is when I walked into the office, whether it was a branch office or a campus location, I was at work. And if I did something in that environment that wasn't appropriate, that's something that the corporation would take responsibility for and I would take responsibility for as an individual. Let's take that a step further. If I'm using a device and that device is a corporate issued device, versus my own personal issue device. As a corporate issue device, there's a certain level of ethical requirements, of legal requirements, of regulatory requirements I have when I use that device. And that's very clear. Let's take the third point, which is what I'm working on and what I'm doing and what I'm actively engaged in. If I'm engaged right now in doing some work for the company, editing a document, for example, then that's clearly work. That's something I'm doing for work. What's happened now, especially in 2020, is all of that is blurred. I no longer go into the office. So it's not really clear. Am I in the office? Am I not in the office? If I'm at home or I'm at the coffee shop, my devices are no longer only corporate issued. I have bring my own device models, which is incredibly favorable to both the individual and the business because I use one device. The business takes advantage of the fact that my smartphone is constantly updating and every 2 to 3 years, refreshing it. So I'm using the latest technology. The business isn't necessarily providing that. There's massive flexibility, that third category where I could be working on something in a coffee shop, I could be working on something personal, and then 30 seconds later, flip over and be editing a document for business. So that has completely blurred what it means to be working and what it means not to be working. You talk about things like childcare and things like that. I think the important attribute here is just like when I'm in the office, I'm either on my corporate network, I'm not on my corporate network. When I'm on my corporate network, there are certain requirements and expectations of me and certain security requirements also that are there. With a work from home model, I can actually create a system that it's very clear when I'm on the network and I'm not on the network. I can actually replicate that network in the home so that when I access the corporation, it's clear that I'm actually on the network at that point. There's certain expectations. Same thing with my device. There is technology that can be used from the cloud and the device that make it very clear that I'm actually on the system and I'm using my BYOD device for work when I'm using it for personal activities. In terms of working on documents and applications, a system that is secure, provides segmentation and provides connectivity, it's absolutely clear where that delineation is. Businesses now are having to provide much more granularity in terms of what it means to be working and not to be working, when I need to take a break to help my child with a math problem, or when I need to provide them lunch. Those are some attributes. Ian, what are your thoughts on those and what have you seen?
But where do we take that to the next level? If we're thinking about access to the internet, most residential internet packages are a 3-day turnaround from something going down. Most companies are going to have a fit if an employee suddenly says, I can't work for 3 days, my internet's out. If they buy business broadband for that employee, on the other hand, that's a 24-hour, and more importantly, the company knows whether that's gone out and is actively being fixed, or again, whether or not there's an issue of trust. Can they trust the employee to say the broadband's working or not working? Do we have any other better solutions for that? How can we make that commercial broadband more business resilient?
Yeah, I think those are great call-outs in that. The BYOD device, for example, there are technologies that are cloud-based, things like Secure Access Services, SASE, as it's called, technologies that are built into a SASE model, SASE solution that can be very clear that when I click this, I'm actually working. And it's not so much that I'm letting people know that I'm working. It's really more I'm activating the security profiles, the business profiles, the application profiles, even the user profiles and network profiles and policies that aligns with how my business views all of us within the company operating and the security that we need. That same device can then be handed over to my child who maybe begins to game on it and do other things. Even in the home, there are technologies that are available now, like secure software-defined wired networking and SASE in the home that provide that distinction where IT can say, anytime you're accessing this SSID, this is all corporate stuff. Don't get on here if you're going to be doing personal things. I can bifurcate an entire section of bandwidth and access and applications that are only available and used for business. That same device, I can have a completely separate bifurcation or segmentation that's all personal and home and activities that the rest of the family is doing, whether it's watching movies or gaming or doing distance learning. It's not secured by the corporation. It's not monitored by the corporation. It's not visible to the corporation. It's completely segmented. So it is possible to provide that segmentation and distinction and a level of privacy, which is essential. And I think that is exciting that those technologies and capabilities are now available.
How much does this take away accidental risk to the business? If we think about employees coming into the office with their own devices, When they're at lunch, they're entitled to use their device as they choose. But they do that over the company network because they're not going to go and find another way or another network to connect their device to. That's always been a risk, that it opens us up to social media or to games or to even the risk of somebody shopping or picking up malware somewhere and giving an access point into the company network. The same is quite true when we think about people at home. Again, one of the concerns has always been that if users are sharing that device amongst members of the family, we have to worry what might end up on that device that could then attack the company network. If we're able to properly segment and better control what's going on, does that remove a lot of the noise and the background clutter, making it easier for SOC analysts to pick up a real attack that's trying to come across the link versus a whole blat of social media connections?
That is a really good question, Ian. Again, this comes back to technologies and tools. There are now innovative new technologies in the networking and network security space, like secure software-defined wired networking and SASE, that actually enable consumer-grade internet to begin to look more like business-grade internet connections, even if it's one single connection into that home. These type of models are things like packet loss concealment. They're the three horsemen of network impairments. There is delay, there's packet loss, and there's jitter. And these are the ones that can really damage your ability to be productive and the way that your applications perform and your user experience, your quality of experience for those applications. Doing things like forward error correction, packet loss concealment, packet replication, TCP/IP optimizations. These are things once only available in enterprise-grade deployments. Implementations within businesses are now actually available to the home workers through the deployment of the technology. That's one way in which these single interfaces can actually become and look much, much better and higher grade than they normally might be. One other aspect is if a business really feels that these employees, it's incredibly important for them to have massively high availability, another internet connection can be run into that location. These technologies like secure SD-WAN can actually take both of those connections and turn them into something that is stellar, almost beyond enterprise grade, enterprise class, and provide phenomenal availability, resiliency, and reliability across those links for all the applications. Another model is we are seeing more cellular being used. You can use a technology to be able to determine, I'm going to use the primary internet link for everything, and I'm going to provide all these improvements on it. If there's a chance that that link degrades and maybe browns out or completely blacks out, I can actually steer individual specific applications that are crucial to the business over to the cellular link. Maybe those are just three applications. Maybe this is a call agent who's working from home, and that call agent needs to be able to have a voice over IP link, needs to be able to have access to the customer success software, and maybe has to be able to have access to the ticket system. They can access all those things, but nothing else runs over that cellular link.
One of the challenges that companies often talk about is a lack of money for things like cybersecurity. And clearly, working from home is going to require a significant reinvestment or refocusing of whatever investment they have there. But if we start to think about people working from home, there is a golden opportunity here for organizations. London office rents, first quarter 2020, were £115 per square foot. In San Francisco, $92 to $95 per square foot. That means that companies should be able to look at reducing their cost of running large offices if they stay with a large home worker population. Now, there's also been the suggestion that companies should pay £7 per day tax for home workers because there's all those other businesses that are affected and public transport and everything else that is lost through people not commuting. But can those savings really be translated into better money to secure the organization? Can they translate into differences in improving people's salary bands for the lower paid workers?
You've definitely packed a lot into that question. Let's unravel it a bit. One is that if I bring my own device into the office and I'm accessing the corporate network, there are certain expectations of me as an individual, as an employee, that the corporation has of me. If you're using my network, there's certain things that I expect you not to be doing. I don't expect you to be doing anything that's illegal or nefarious or, you know, those type of things. In fact, many corporations will actually monitor for that type of activity on their network. They'll do it through cloud systems and security analytics and things like that. That's one aspect we've all experienced. That's the same thing whether I'm at home and I'm accessing the corporate SSID from this secure SD-WAN device that's running in my home, the same level of expectations and requirements would exist there. The other dimension is the days of feeling like I can completely secure all of my devices and running virus scanning on the device all the time. Although many of us do it, we try to protect things as much as possible. We're not going to be able to thwart everything. This is where the cloud comes into play. Somebody once told me that the importance with security is don't drag the sessions to your security, bring the security to your sessions. What that means is that my sessions have actually changed. They're now much more cloud oriented. My sessions are originating and terminating in the cloud oftentimes, likely 50 to 80% of those sessions are happening there. I need to be able to bring the security capabilities, things like Secure Access Service Edge or SASE in the cloud, support that in the cloud, close to where those applications are originating and terminating. Being able to identify traffic that's coming all the way down to the device. If I'm accessing corporate applications within the cloud, I want to be sure that the data that I'm attempting to push up into the cloud within that corporation, that's actually scanned and protected, and I'm analyzing that to be sure there's no malware that's being pushed back up into the applications. It's where how a lot of these viruses and malware and ransomware get propagated through that. That's one key. That, again, you know, back in the cloud and providing that protection, and then providing a level of segmentation on those devices. I know that these particular applications, when anybody accesses those, I'm going to run this level of ultra protection and scanning and deep packet inspection, potentially, depending on the type of the profile of the application for those applications. The key is bringing the security to the sessions versus dragging the sessions to wherever the security might be. Most have done security back in the private data center and typically like to take everything, all the traffic back to that. That's the way in which those are protected. Your third piece is there's a barrage of traffic happening from these devices and from maybe even that one home back over the segmented corporate network. How do I actually sift through that and analyze that? And it's pretty impressive now that the technology available, especially in the cloud and even on premises with things like Secure SD-WAN, is incredibly powerful. And the ability to do a lot of this at line rate, where there's negligible or even not even noticeable impact on any performance for any of these applications, and being able to sift through and determine, okay, based on these headers, based on this flow, based on this session, I've identified this and this looks to be okay. I need to do some deep packet inspection, you know, here to look at the content and the payload. And maybe this is something that I can actually let flow freely because it's leisure traffic. The performance now is really quite impressive when it comes to security and networking.
I'd like to see much more openness from employers to taking on people, especially where we have skill shortages. We work in an industry around security where employers still tend to think of people having bums on seats. Yet they then complain there's a shortage just because in that location where they are, they can't get people. And when they can get people, people aren't necessarily willing to relocate or do long distance travel because of the impact on family and schooling and things like that. So that would be a really nice benefit. But I also see an interesting switch in perhaps how some attacks may be launched. If we look traditionally at a phishing attack, we can now sit online. And if I know the office that you work at, I can use online sources to find out where you live very quickly, because you will often live within 2 hours travel of an office. That gives me a radius that I can work with. I can then refine that based on your job title, your expectation of salary package, and very quickly get to find out a lot about you to launch a phishing attack. If we have a much more remote, more disparate set of employees who aren't tied to an office, that changes the types of attacks, but it also changes how we do behavioral analysis of individuals. Because again, we tend to think of how we look at those individuals as the time zone they're in, the locations they're in, the sort of things they would do in their normal working day. When that becomes fragmented, our defenses get fragmented. Where do you see attacks changing? Where do you see defenses evolving?
Absolutely. I think we are at the beginning of a redistribution of the work profile. That is going to transform many things. And you talked about two of them, which are key: office space and office utilization and office expenses. And the second piece is employees and where employees are able to work from, salaries, compensation for employees, all these things. Over the next few years, we're going to see this massive transformation, which is going to be a great thing for communities. It's going to be a great thing for individuals. It's going to be a great thing for businesses and enterprises and SMEs. The reason is that these things take time. This is an evolution. Things like being able to reduce my expenses for office space are going to be key. Maybe we begin to see a redistribution of the use of buildings in some of these cities like London and San Francisco and Munich and others. I think there'll still be a requirement to have office space. We're social beings and we thrive on being with one another. We thrive on seeing one another, on shaking hands and talking and making real eye contact with each other. I think that there will be spaces for that to continue to occur. It might be a little bit different. Maybe I don't need as much space for every single employee that works for the company, but that will exist. That doesn't necessarily have to be in the hub of these big cities. They can be more distributed. We could see more of a distribution of where the office is versus it being a headquarters or a campus location. Maybe it becomes a little more remote access location. And the other big piece is that suddenly I believe that businesses no longer, a lot of times in the larger metropolitan areas, it's incredibly competitive to be able to bring in talent because one, you've got to pay them because in the past I've had to live in proximity of my corporate location, my headquarters location, my campus location, and I had to pay them more because it was more expensive to live closer to those locations. And there were many more people. The population was much higher there. Now we're beginning to see this equalization. We're seeing it with big companies like Google and Facebook, for example, technology companies who are saying it's okay to work wherever you want to work. But in a year, we're going to recalibrate salaries depending on where you work. Is that the right thing to do? I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe it's not. I think naturally it will occur anyway. If I live in Northern England and I'm working for a company that's in London, my expenses might be much, much lower than they would be if I worked in London. And I'm going to be more competitive because I'm willing to take a little bit of a lower salary, lower compensation to work for this company because my expenses, my cost of living are not as high. So I think there's going to be this redistribution and recalculation that occurs over a few years in how employees are paid by their employers for that primary reason. Not that businesses are going to say, hey, I'm going to pay you less. It's just a natural equalization which occurs, which is it's supply and demand. Hey, I can actually get the same talent a little further out of town at a more competitive price. That equalization will begin. Those are two factors that I can see. Ian, what are you seeing beyond the pricing you talked about in terms of square footage and things relative to this?
Well, I was going to say, but that opens a whole interesting can of worms in terms of identifying people. We are still in many ways stuck in the username password generation. There's been reports I've been looking at where risk from biometrics is felt to be very high by users. The trust really isn't there in the technology, and particularly in people keeping biometric data safe and secure. Identity has to itself evolve. We're no longer really talking about an individual when we talk about identity. It's every device, every piece of IoT, every piece of software on our servers wants to connect and have an account these days. I see a bigger challenge here in how we create a new security based on trusted identity, whether that be mechanisms we know today, or whether it be decentralized ID, or one of those new ones.
I think that's a really, really good point, Ian. There is an inherent benefit, as you've described, by having a much more distributed workforce, and that I don't know, where do I go after that particular company and how do I attack that company given the distribution? We know that the home ends up being the weakest link in terms of our security profiles. Many folks have never really focused on creating a secure network environment, an application environment for home, because it's primarily mostly leisure activities that are occurring there. That creates a massive open and vulnerability there. It comes down to things like I keep bringing up Secure Access Service Edge, which is SASE, this idea of three attributes: identity, trust, and context. Security now suddenly becomes no longer just about securing a location, but it's all about securing an entity, securing the way in which that user is interacting with corporate assets. That's probably a key piece. Once I shift to that model, where I'm looking at identity, trust, and context, suddenly it may not matter as much what network you're on. You know, it doesn't matter if you're on a cellular network, if you're on the network at the coffee shop or at the grocery store, at a bank. It's all about who you are as the individual. And as a corporation, can I identify that? And can I also maintain or monitor your context? If you're normally outside of London accessing these applications, but you maybe you travel to Taiwan to do some work there, suddenly the context has changed, your location's changed, your profile's changed, but you still authenticate. I can still identify you as a user. I still have established trust with you as an individual that you're trusted and you have access to specific applications. But let's say you're an engineer and suddenly you're trying to download the entire corporate directory. You're trying to download all the financial data of the company. Suddenly the context has changed. What I want to do in that case is I want to kind of back off and say, you know what? I did identify you and I did trust you, but the context has changed. So I'm going to ask you to re-authenticate. No offense, please just re-authenticate with the one-time password I'm going to send you. Maybe you do that and you come back on, but you're still trying to access these applications. In fact, it looks like we've detected potential ransomware that seems to be attempting to be uploaded. I'm going to shut it completely down and ask you to actually redo everything, reset your password, reestablish who you are, and maybe go through a series of questions and multi-factor authentication and things like that. That's how things are going to change, that we cannot secure a location. What you described was perfect. The people in my company are now dispersed around the world, and there's no one location that they're in that I can actually guarantee security. So I need to actually shift to a different model, and I think that that's what that profile will look like. What are you seeing, Ian?
But is it not essential to this whole idea of if people are going to be remote, they're going to be nomadic, for want of a better phrase, that if we don't resolve identity before this becomes the permanent state of how we work, we will be irretrievably flawed when it comes to security.
This certainly is a pervasive issue, and we're really going beyond even just the corporate profile into the personal profile. You look at the number of passwords and usernames that one has, numbers in the hundreds of combinations for different applications and sites and things that we access. You're absolutely spot on that we're seeing indicators of this. There's some hope, like you say, the biometrics and some other options or things, but something's really got to change here. We need to have something that's just almost miraculous in terms of the way in which it addresses this for identity and trust and being able to access and allocate proper access to applications and data and resources.
Decentralized ID is going to be quite transformational. It takes us back to the whole idea that we have an identity that can be trusted where no one individual holds our identity. It's pulled from multiple sources. Microsoft's already rolling out its version inside Active Directory, but only at a corporate level. There's a long way to go before that becomes a wider trust issue. But there are more challenges at the moment than I see solutions. If we look around, we talk about multi-factor authentication. We have lots of very large companies out there. They can afford to go multi-factor. Small to mid-sized companies have always struggled with understanding how to integrate, how to deploy, how to get their employees using it. Cloud may be the solution to that, but it still requires changes in process and thinking and everything else. That plays into my final question for you on the podcast. If we look at 2021, given all the upheaval and disruption we've had, the fact that work from home is still going to be the norm for some workers and a markedly increased number than it was in 2019, what do you see as being the key challenges for organizations in securing users, securing data, securing access?
Sure. There are a lot of great and strong and formidable authentication and identity mechanisms out there, and they continue to evolve. Ultimately, the internet itself was an invention which was monumental in terms of the way in which it changed the way all of us live, work, play, and learn. Also, it is transformational. It's had the ability to really level set the playing field for many people around the world. Access is a key piece of that. Initially, the technologies were used for things like SMTP and mail exchange and looking at bulletin boards and things like that, but it's changed dramatically over the last 20 years. One piece here is that it's the benefits of getting on the internet and using the internet far outweigh the risks in many cases, that there's much more to be gained from doing that than to be lost. Absolutely, there's no doubt about that. When you look at people's original hesitation, many folks were hesitant to do online banking, online retail, and sharing information. Now that's really changed significantly in that most people are very comfortable with that. Online retailing and online banking has become pervasive. And the security mechanisms that are in place to identify me as an individual, allow me to authenticate, allow me to register and determine that this is me that you're interacting with, improved significantly over the last two decades. These technologies continue to improve and they absolutely can be better, but I think we've got a pretty good model today. It's not foolproof, of course. but it continues to evolve. And what things are you seeing? What technologies are you seeing that you think will be transformational in improving that, Ian? It comes down to leveraging the cloud, you know, for security. That's essential. Many businesses, and Ian, you talked about smaller businesses not having the resources to be able to support things like multi-factor authentication and other security solutions. The cloud, much like the internet, becomes the great equalizer in that I can now gain access to the same tools that the global 200 companies have access to. The same thing goes for leveraging the cloud for security and taking advantage of those economies of scale, taking advantage of the fact that a lot of the cloud security solutions have built into it an innate learned knowledge of hundreds of thousands of companies that are using these services. When a threat comes in and is profiled and identified, everybody gets to take advantage of that, from the smallest company to the largest companies. That's a powerful attribute, leveraging cloud security. That's going to be a big factor in terms of helping to secure this massively distributed workforce that we've described. A second attribute is there are technologies that can be combined with that cloud model to extend security services all the way into the home. Depending on which business I am, if I want to replicate the corporate network inside somebody's home, you can do that today with these technologies such as secure SD-WAN, software-defined wire network, and put that network in on-site, on-premises. If I've got bankers who I only want them to work on those applications when they're connected to the network and they don't have access anyway else, you can begin to do that. Believe it or not, you can bring all the enterprise services, the security, the routing, the visibility, the analytics, the metrics, all that down into the home today very inexpensively. It doesn't cost very much. Third attribute is what we can do to extend that to the devices, whether it's BYOD or corporate devices. How do I leverage the cloud, but also maybe have just a thin client device on those BYOD devices that gives me more assurance that when you're accessing corporate assets, corporate applications, and corporate tools, that I'm doing the absolute best I can to ensure that that's a secure interaction and that you're not introducing threats. Those would be the three things. Rely on the cloud more, bring in all these services, enterprise-grade, enterprise-class services, all the way into the home, and then the device, the identity, the trust, and the context combined with all of that.
I think it's going to be just as trying a year in 2021 for many organizations, particularly around security, as 2020. Mike, thank you for talking with me today.
As always, thank you, Ian.